Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. Hello and welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators. How are you this week? I hope you're all doing well. At the time of this recording, we are in our sixth or seventh week of lockdown, but luckily for me, it's mostly business as usual. The current crisis means that offline networking won't be possible for a long time to come still. Many, if not everyone, is turning to online networking to grow our professional relationships, to market and network and turn them into new business, hopefully, especially on LinkedIn. And this is not the time to be invisible online. As translators, we can work remotely and with clients from all over the world. So let's take advantage of that. In this episode, I am interviewing a freelance translator and marketing expert who has given many talks and trainings on inbound marketing and LinkedIn. But before I welcome her, a brief listener shout out. This one goes to Alips in Belgium, who says that Tessa's podcast is highly informative and useful. Her interviews are friendly. She manages to provide the listener with insights into the guests and a lot of information about the given topic. Thank you so much, Alips. Now I would like to welcome Maria Scheibengraf to the podcast. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, Tess. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure having you here, and congratulations on your baby.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Did I say your last name correctly?
Yeah. Spot on, actually. Yeah, very well.
Okay. It sounds German.
It is. My granddad was German. So, the surname passed down to my dad and then to me.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your career in the translation industry.
Okay. So, I'm an English to Spanish translator, Latin Spanish, Latin American Spanish, to be specific. And I've specialized in marketing and IT. I started in the industry in January 2011, so over 9 years at the moment.
Yeah.
Although I've been doing this full time since the end of 2016.
Okay.
Most of my business comes through my digital presence, or thanks to my digital presence. So I'm always coaching and mentoring about how to establish one and how to apply inbound marketing strategies to attract potential clients and convert them into customers and then promoters of your brand and your services. So I'd like to do some of that today as well in your podcast.
Yes, and that's why I have you here, because I think that is so important. But I'm going to back up a little. Are you from Argentina?
Yes, I am originally from Argentina, born and raised there. But I moved to the UK when I was 22. That was in 2014. I'm 28 at the moment. I've been living on and off for 6 years in the UK.
So you said that you've been in the industry since 2009, but started full-time as a translator in 2016. What did you do in between?
It's 2011 that I started. It's been 9 years.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. So in between, the economic crisis in Argentina, constant economic crisis in Argentina means that you have to find creative ways to make a living. And I was juggling a 5-year university course there on translation with 3 jobs. Mm-hmm. One of them in a public policy consultancy agency. So it was, they did marketing as well. So they had clients for whom they provided consultancy services in all things politics and marketing. I worked there first in an admin position, and then I slightly moved up the the company into higher positions, and I coordinated market research, and then I moved on to the social media department. So a lot of my current knowledge comes from then. Mm-hmm. I was also teaching English as a second language at high schools and primary schools, and tutoring university students. So all those three things together, plus studying at uni, and then the occasional freelancing project in terms of translation. And
very yeah. British accent. How, and you haven't lived in the UK very long. Where does that come, or why did you decide to move to the UK? And
right, so in Argentina, at least in the university where I studied, they teach you British English. But to be honest, I never had a British accent until I moved here. But it's been, like I said, on and off 6 years. So when you're immersed in the culture and the language, which is the reason why I moved to the UK, just to get immersed in there, you kind of acquire it. You can tell I'm not native. You can tell English is not my first language, but I do realize that I sound a bit more British than American. And that's just because I live and breathe in the UK. British.
Yes, which is a natural result.
So, yeah, exactly.
Okay, but basically from the start, you have been using inbound marketing or online marketing and LinkedIn. So that's what I wanted to talk about, because you've given a lot of talks about it. So to you personally, what is inbound marketing and why do you think it's so effective?
Right. So just to provide a bit of background, I teamed up with my three colleagues and we founded Crizzle Translation Services in 2016, just because we realized that the industry conditions were not right. And we wanted to do a project of our own and grow as a team. But we had zero budget. We did not have any money to invest in the business we were creating. So we knew that our only tool at the moment was the internet and social media, and we had to start marketing ourselves on social media and online without any budget. And that's how this whole inbound marketing thing started to make sense for us. It started out a bit intuitive, and from my knowledge or the knowledge I had acquired at this consultancy firm I mentioned, but it was playing by ear, and then we realized that what we were doing was called inbound marketing and had a name, and it was working for us. So inbound marketing, by definition, is basically a business strategy or a marketing strategy that works by attracting your potential customers to you. Yep. Through valuable content and through experiences that you can provide to them that are tailored to them. You provide them with value and with experiences that they find useful. And then when they are ready to buy your product or services, you are the first person they think of. You come to the front of their minds. And that's what inbound marketing is about, just attracting them to you as if pulling them to you instead of chasing them down. The metaphor is you have a magnet instead of a hammer to just chase them around. And the good thing, or the reason I think inbound marketing works so well, is because it's free to do. So I mean, of course, if you have money to invest, you can always make it work even better, but you can start out with inbound marketing with zero budget, and that's so useful when you're starting out in the industry.
So is your team local there in London, or are you
Nope. So Paula and Antonella are in Argentina, and then Julieta is in Barcelona, and I'm here in London. So when we started out, it was the four of us together all in Argentina, but then I moved back to the UK because I went back and forth from Argentina to the UK. And when we started this, we were all in Argentina, but then I moved back to the UK and Julieta moved to Barcelona, and we have just run the business from three countries, really.
And do you do any, like, well, not right now, currently, but do you do any in-person marketing as a team?
No, we don't. We conduct all our marketing online. Okay. I mean, I have, it's a tricky question because if you count attending offline events for offline networking, then yeah, I have done in-person marketing because I have attended in person and talked face-to-face with other people and stuff. Of course, with the current coronavirus situation, all networking is being conducted online.
Yes.
And so it's more important than ever to have a digital presence. Yes. But we have relied mostly on online marketing and on LinkedIn as the main platform for it.
Mm-hmm. And has it been very effective?
Yes, absolutely. We have grown our follower base, even though, you know, a growing follower count is no guarantee of anything. More eyeballs on your content do mean more opportunities for business down the road. And that has proven right for us. We have received that most of our biggest clients at the moment, they have come from LinkedIn. And I could say probably 80% of our business comes from LinkedIn at the moment.
Wow, that's amazing. But so I was going to ask, which is your favorite online tool or social media? But you already answered that. That's LinkedIn. But do you also have a pretty good website, I think.
We do, which at the moment, ironically, is down.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. Something happened there with a plugin that's broken the homepage or something. So we're having it rebuilt. We're going to launch it next week, the new version.
Okay.
But yeah, we do have a website because it gives you authority and credibility, and it just supports your whole branding and marketing strategy. But it's not the main channel through which we are getting our business. It's just a support space in a way. We do have a blog.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our blog posts have ranked really high on Google several times for different keywords. So that has brought us business as well. But like I said, our main source of traffic is through LinkedIn, not through the website.
Would you say that we need a website, or do you think that LinkedIn is enough?
I do think we need a website. I had the same discussion a couple of weeks ago in another interview, and I think my point came across a bit confusing. So I thank you for the question so I can clarify it. A website is really, really important because it's a shop window in a sense. So it's where people go and check you out and see whether you have credibility and authority in your field. Is where you can in a way show everything that you do and you are and you stand for and your values and your business proposition and everything that you have to offer. It's really, really important that you have one.
Mm-hmm.
However, that doesn't mean that it's not possible to bring business through other channels and that a website will always be the main source of business for you. Not every translator is the same. Not every translator works in the same industry or has the same things to offer, offers the same services, or talks to the same target audience. But in my case in particular, and our case in particular, LinkedIn has proven more beneficial in terms of conversion and attracting customers than the website. But we would not have been able, I think, to convert those customers if we hadn't had a website that supported our claim as to who we are and what we do.
Yes, I know personally, if I get an inquiry, somebody wants me to do a translation, if I can't find them on online, if I don't see a website, I don't really trust them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's often the case. However, I do know several highly successful translators with no website.
Yes.
But they are few, and I cannot explain how they made it without a website. So you should talk to them mainly, not me, about it. In general, I believe a website is very, very important.
Well, let's say like this: if you want to use inbound marketing and contact and market to people online, I do think you need a website too. You might be able to do without one if you can meet your potential clients in person, because you can prove your credibility much better in person.
Yeah, there are also translators who work mainly for agencies and who get their work,
yes,
through ProZ, for example. So they have a very complete and comprehensive profile on there, and that kind of works as a website for them because all their data is there. I do not agree with that approach. It hasn't worked for me personally, but it doesn't mean that it cannot work for other people.
Yes.
I do think at least a landing page is important to have so that they can find out about you, your main contact information, your credentials, what makes you an expert in your field, etc. Even if it's a very simple landing website, landing page, sorry, that should be enough, but it has to be there. Something has to be there.
And I agree. And I also agree, we all need to do, we all need to market our business and do what works for us. We're all different. But today we're talking about inbound marketing.
Yeah.
So what is your procedure or Crisol Translations procedure? How do you use content marketing to attract clients?
Right. So the first thing that we did, because like I said, when we started out, we were playing by ear. So we made many, many mistakes, one of which was not being clear on who we were addressing.
Yes.
Who our ideal customer was. We were just talking to everyone and anyone who would listen. We were writing stuff for everyone and anyone. We were writing a lot of stuff for our colleagues, which was great because we made really good relationships from them, but from that content, but it wasn't bringing us any business. So some time ago, when we realized we were not doing it correctly, we sat down and we planned a business strategy around our ideal customer, who we wanted to target. Was it in our case, it's SMEs and large companies, and marketing managers within those SMEs and large companies. But it's, you know, the ideal client differs from translator to translator and from service provider to service provider. So the first thing is to just be very clear on who you're speaking to, because once you are, it gets a hell of a lot easier to write content that's winning content that will convert, first attract and then convert clients. So that's the first thing. And then what we did...
Sorry to interrupt you. What industry are you focusing on? I mean, small and medium-sized companies and larger companies, but in what industry?
In the marketing and digital services industry in general. But that's me personally. The thing is that our business model is quite curious and not very common, because we market ourselves not as a company or an agency, but neither as one freelancer. We say that we are a team of freelancers, and each of us specializes in a different area. So the client gets to choose who of us work on their project, who leads the project according to the subject matter. So the expert will always be leading and signing off everything. And they kind of get to play around with the team members and put together a team that works for them, as if they were a football coach putting a team together. So we do target several types of clients, but we also don't have the same marketing strategy for Crisol as a team as we do for each of us individually. So I, as Maria Scheibengraf, have a certain type of ideal client. My colleagues, Paula specializes in healthcare, Julieta in social sciences, Antonella in tourism and gastronomy. They target different types of clients as well in their personal marketing efforts through LinkedIn. And then as Crisol, we market the team with a different ideal customer in mind as well. So it's quite complex because we are both freelancers and a small company at the same time.
So let's focus on your part then, since I have you on the call. So marketing and digital marketing, how do you do it? What are your steps?
Right. So the first thing I do is I try to think as a marketing manager at a company, and I try to think as a sales manager, what kind of problems they are experiencing, what are their pain points. For example, a pain point might be that they are not converting as much, or their return on investment is not as high in Spain as it is in the UK. Or in Latin America, or it's very, very good in Spain, but the same kind of content is not converting as highly in Latin America. So problems that they may be having, And then what I do is I write up content that will help them get some insights into how to approach the solution to those problems. I write up content that they find useful, and then I also establish myself as an expert in that area and as a person that will help them solve the problems. Mm-hmm. So my content has a twofold purpose in a way. First, to create value for them in a very tailored and specific way so that they feel like I'm talking to them and no one else. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, showing them that I know my stuff, that I am an expert, I'm trained, that I have a lot of experience in the area, and that I have solved similar problems for previous customers in the past, so I can do it for them as well. Mm-hmm. And that kind of content comes in many forms. So I will write posts on LinkedIn, articles, blog posts. What I'm doing here, just coming on a podcast as a guest, is also content. So there are so many ways to create content. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that your ideal client is getting the feeling that you know your stuff, that you're an expert and that you can help them.
Mm-hmm. And do you always include, so let's say, do you do it differently depending on if it's a LinkedIn article or a blog post or just a post on LinkedIn? Do you always include a call to action?
I am not a big, personally, I'm not a big fan of call to actions on LinkedIn, just okay. Because the strategy that I've decided to follow is to just write as I speak. So be very informal and as if people could hear my voice when they're reading my posts, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't always feel comfortable including a call to action. Mm-hmm. But I can allow myself that luxury because I have a big follower count. So I get the results anyway. And I'm comfortable with the level of conversion I get. I'm very happy with it. If I wasn't happy with my level of conversion and if I didn't have enough followers or people engaging with my content, including a call to action at the end would definitely help me solve that. So I do recommend including a call to action at the end, at least until you feel that you have that you can take the license of not doing it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I do always include call to actions in our blog posts, because at least, you know, an invite to follow a link to the homepage or the contact us page and stuff like that.
And have you measured which one works better, articles on LinkedIn or blog posts? Or are right, so, do you share them at the same?
I do tend to recycle my content. So if I write up a blog post, I will probably post that as an article on LinkedIn as well. The thing is that it's very difficult to measure your success on LinkedIn in quantifiable terms, because it's a comprehensive kind of strategy. So everything works together. Your yep. posts, your commenting on other people's posts, the posts that you like, your articles, the videos that you upload, the groups that you join, all of it together makes people start to recognize you and your name and your brand and reach out to you privately for your services, etc. Whereas measuring conversion on a website is way easier, because you can track the traffic that you get, you've got Google Analytics, you've got it's much easier to just get numbers on a website than it is on LinkedIn. However, we do notice when we measure up the number of quote requests and inquiries that we get, that 80% of them come through LinkedIn as opposed to a 20% that come through a website.
Mm-hmm. And those that come through LinkedIn, then, do you recognize the people contacting you because you have either seen that they like your post or you have reached out to them too in a group or something?
That's a really good question. No, a lot of the time I have no idea who they are. And that tells you that your ideal customer might not be engaging with your content, might not be liking it or commenting it, but there's always someone watching or reading. Mm-hmm. And many of my clients have come to me and said, look, I've been following you and your content for a long time, and I think you're the right person to help me out with this. And I have no idea who they are because they never interacted with my content, but they were following it and reading it and watching what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So that also tells you that even if you don't get a lot of engagement in a post, you shouldn't get discouraged because there's always someone there watching.
So I guess I have a lot of follow-up questions, and I think you've answered some of them already, but I guess the most important thing is to really speak to your ideal clients in your articles and blog posts.
Absolutely. Because trying to be all things to all people just doesn't work. I read a post recently, I think it was by Peter Wendt, on LinkedIn. He was saying, he was giving an example of four people, they were all doctors, and how they marketed themselves. So one of them said, hi, I'm a doctor. The other one said, hi, I'm a doctor, I work with women. Mm-hmm. The third one said, hi, I'm a doctor, I work with pregnant women. And the fourth one said, hi, I'm a doctor, I work with pregnant women who are less than 20 weeks pregnant, and I help them solve their concerns around, I don't know, this or that. Mm-hmm. So it was showing that all four of them, when meeting a pregnant woman who was under 20 weeks pregnant, all four of them thought that they were the right person to help her. Mm-hmm. But she only thought one of them could help her, yeah, the one who was talking directly to her. Mm-hmm. And that guy, the fourth one, will be addressing a smaller audience, which can be scary. Addressing a smaller audience can be scary, mm-hmm, but his conversion was higher because every 20-week pregnant woman was going to come to him and not the other three. And I think that example applies to us translators as well. If we need to start thinking from the perspective of a client. If I need a technical manual translated from, say, English to Swedish, and it's about ventilating systems, mm-hmm, then if I come across an English to Swedish translator specialized in ventilating systems,
yes,
that's the person I'm going to contact, and not just any English to Swedish translator, because yes, I know that person can deal exactly with what I need.
Yes. I want to comment on this, or let's talk about this a little bit, because I have trained a lot of translators, and one of the most difficult thing for them is to niche down, to narrow down, or to dare to do it because they are afraid of losing business. But the truth is that they're losing business by not niching down or daring to claim an area of specialization. And if you're just starting out or in the beginning, or even if you're experienced and you know that you need to niche down more, they're afraid because they don't know which niche to pick. But I heard a marketing podcast episode recently, and that said it's worse not to pick a niche or than to pick the wrong one.
Totally.
So totally. It's better to just pick one, try it out, and the clarity will come from it than to not picking one at all because you're afraid you'll pick the wrong one or something.
Absolutely. There's always time to figure out if that's where you feel comfortable. There's always time to correct your business strategy and to get trained in a different niche. And you know, but if you don't pick a niche, then you're in a kind of limbo. You think you can help everyone, but no one feels you can help them.
Yeah. So true. And like I say, action brings clarity. If you just pick one, go with it, then you will have clarity to know this is the right one for me or I need to tweak this.
Absolutely. And even if you do switch to a different niche down the road, the experience and the knowledge you've gained from trying out a different one in the very first place is also always added value.
Mm-hmm. So one of my questions was, what should I write about? But I think we kind of covered it. But do you have any more, anything to add, except that we should just put ourselves in our target client's shoes and try to solve their problems?
I've got a few content ideas that I can share, and a tip on how I started personally when I needed to come up with content. Mm-hmm. So what I did back in the day when I wasn't too sure what to write about is I attended, of course, it's not possible in the current context, but it can be done online. I attended the places where my ideal customers hang out. Mm-hmm. So I made myself present there and I started paying attention to what they were talking about and what things caught their attention and what their interests were. And then I went and found.
Can you give me a specific example of where you went?
Well, when it was offline, I just went to industry events. So marketing industry events. I attended them. I talked to marketing managers that were in attendance as well, to speakers, etc. Nowadays, a good substitute for that until the whole coronavirus thing is over are LinkedIn groups. So join a LinkedIn group where your ideal customer will be. And that's also really important because that will allow you, by being member of the same group as your ideal customer, to message them directly, which is not possible outside if you're not part of the same group and you don't have them as a connection. LinkedIn will not let you message them directly. So that's another tip there. So just hang out where they are and pay attention to what they're interested in. And that's a way to start creating content. There's also a tool online called Answer the Public. Mm-hmm. Where you can type a keyword and it will show you the highest performing search queries online.
Yes.
So what people are searching for that keyword, that will give you tips on what to write as well.
You can test three questions or three keywords there. Do you have the paid version of it?
No, I don't. I mix it up between Answer the Public and the blog ideas generator. Okay. So that's another one. It's by HubSpot. That's a good one as well.
So we'll link to these in the show notes.
Good. And then because I mix it up, I do a bit of those two. I also try and write about my story. Every now and again, when I have added a few hundred contacts, a really good post to make on LinkedIn is a reintroduction. So for those of you with whom I've only just recently connected, this is who I am and what I do. You can share client.
You just put that as a post on LinkedIn, like
yeah, update. Exactly. So that will have two purposes. First, you will let your new connections know what you do, who you are, but you will also be reminding your existing connections about it without sounding salesy or without sounding like you want to sell to them. Yeah. You can share client testimonials. When you get a good review, go and share it on LinkedIn. You won't come across as bragging or as showing off. It's just you can be really authentic about it and say, oh, I'm so happy. Look at the review I got. I want to share this with my network because it makes me really happy. And they can see that your clients are happy with what you offer.
So I want to go back a little bit then. When you say that you, for your new contacts on LinkedIn, do you also actively go and connect with your ideal client? Like,
yes,
be connected.
Absolutely. Virginia Katsimpidi gave a talk on Translation Mastermind Summit some time ago about how to best use the search function on LinkedIn to find the people, the decision makers that will be purchasing from you and your ideal customers. So making the most of the search function on LinkedIn is really good as well. I have, to be honest, I used to do it more than I do it at the moment because I'm getting results by just people coming to me. Yeah. But it is a good way of doing a bit of outbound marketing as well in combination with inbound, just connecting with the people that you want to buy from you. The thing is that even though I connect with them actively, I don't send them a salesy message as soon as they accept my invitation. Mm-hmm. Which is something that I get a lot from people who want to sell to me, and I find really awkward and uncomfortable. But that's just me.
What do you write in your connection request?
I don't always write up a connection request. If I have the time, I will. Otherwise, I won't. But I do. I just introduce myself. Hi, I'm Maria. I think we could provide good value to each other because we kind of share an industry. You're in the marketing industry, and I'm a marketing translator. So looking forward to connect and have a great day. Something like that, you know, just very, very informal and not salesy at all. And then I will make sure to engage with their content and with the things they post, so they can start noticing my name coming up again and again in what they post, and that will start building a relationship. And down the line, if they ever need English to Spanish marketing translation services, they will remember me and they will come to me.
Yeah. So when you try to find connections, then do you focus on the Spanish market or people in Spain or Argentina or Latin America, or do you just focus on marketing in general?
My ideal customer is any English speaking marketing manager at an SME or a large company looking to penetrate the Spanish market, either in Spain or in Latin America,
and how digitally. Do you know if they want to do that?
You don't know if they want to do that, but if they are an SME or a large company, yeah, and you've researched the company and you see that they sell worldwide, for example, mm-hmm, there are high chances that they will need a localized website, localized content, that their e-commerce platform will need to be tailored to the Spanish culture or the Latin American culture. So you can always reach out and ask, how's that working for them? Are they converting enough? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You will always have to make assumptions about your ideal customer. That's part of it. That's part of creating the profile for it. But the chances are that if a large company or an SME is doing business digitally, globally, that they will need my services. Yeah, especially with Spanish.
Same thing here. Trial and error will bring you clarity. You don't know, but you have to start somewhere.
Exactly. And, you know, in the case of Spanish, it's easier to make assumptions because it's the second most spoken language in the world, so after English. So if they are doing business globally, chances are they will need Spanish at some point.
Whereas I have to be a little bit more focused on people that want to or do business with Sweden. In particular.
Exactly. Exactly. That shows how between you and I, we're both translators, we both work with marketing, but we have different target audiences.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this sounds like you're spending a lot of time on LinkedIn. Is that true?
Yes. But I am not spending that time in other channels or doing marketing in other ways. So instead of...
per day do you spend on LinkedIn?
Well, that's changed since I've had my baby. But a few hours, maybe 2 or 3 hours a day. Okay. The thing is that because you can do it from your phone, I kind of used my dead time, if that's the term. So when I was waiting for the bus or when I was on the bus commuting somewhere, or if I was just bored lying on the sofa with nothing to do. So everything that was dead time, I made sure I turned it into productive LinkedIn time. Mm-hmm. And that way it didn't feel like a burden.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had anything else to mention about what to know, what to write about. We talked about Answer the Public, Blog Ideas Generator, reintroduction post, and client testimonials. Did you have anything else before?
Yeah, you can offer a freebie. For example, you can create a how-to guide or a glossary or something that that shows that you're an expert in that, and then offer it for free as a taster. That will create value for the people who ask for it, and it will also establish you as an expert in that area. You can show your product in any other way. So you can, if you've translated a website and you've got permission to share it, you can do so, and you can show your work that way. You can create a debate around current affairs or industry affairs. You can ask for advice. Asking for advice on LinkedIn creates a lot of engagement, and it also shows that you're human, that you need the support of your network to make decisions or to figure things out. So just going in there and saying, I've got this dilemma, what do I do, what's your advice,
What kind of a question would you ask then that your target clients could help you with?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever posted anything that my ideal customers could help me with, except for once or twice where I was not clear on what marketing thing to do. I think I once posted about when Twitter changed from 240 characters to 280. Mm-hmm. I wasn't clear on how many characters links were taken up, which I think is 50. So I asked my network, does anyone know this? And a few of my ideal clients engaged with me and answered that. But other than that, the other times I've asked for advice has been to the industry and to my colleagues, which I'm glad it's coming up, because it's also important to build relationships with your colleagues within the industry. So mixing it up between writing for your ideal customers and writing for your colleagues can prove really beneficial down the line if your colleagues are to outsource work to you, which sometimes happens.
Yes, I know. I've experienced the same thing. I want to go back to your freebie. Do you put that behind so that they need to provide their email address to get it?
I particularly don't, because I don't execute any outbound marketing, so I wouldn't be using those email addresses at all.
Okay.
But that might not be the case for another translator. If some translators, like yourself, you've got a newsletter, for example, and you send newsletters out. So in that case, trading the freebie for the email address or for a subscription to the newsletter is a great way to increase your newsletter subscribers as well, as you might probably know. But it doesn't work for me particularly, because I don't execute any outbound marketing.
Yes, and I don't do it for my translation clients necessarily. Okay, so how do I know if it's working, my inbound marketing strategy?
Oh, you'll know. You will start getting more followers. You will start getting tagged on posts and recommended. You will start getting direct messages. You will see things that you've created or talked about that they're being published elsewhere, and you'll know that that's reached that place because there's people watching what you're doing and listening to you and taking you as an expert. Mainly you will start seeing that you've got more clients and more people contacting you and asking about your services without you having to contact them in the first place. They will just come to you. When that starts happening, it's because whatever you're doing in terms of email marketing has started to pay off. It won't happen from one day to the next. It won't happen from one week to the next. It's going to take time. It's all about persistence and consistency. There's not a one size fits all kind of answer to that.
Let's say if I've been doing this for 3 months and I don't see any engagement, does that mean that I should tweak?
Probably. I would give it a 2-3 month period time. But also if in those 2 or 3 months you do start to see some changes, even if they are very slow or very small, do not give up. In my case, it took me probably 8-9 months from when I started until I got where I wanted to be. But in the meantime, throughout those 8-9 months, I did tweak stuff around. It's just the main thing is to be persistent and consistent, and to not get discouraged if you don't see results straight away, but also to experiment a lot. There's no harm in experimenting on LinkedIn at all.
So when you said that you spend almost 2 hours a day on LinkedIn, what do you do on LinkedIn every day? Do you post every day?
No, I don't post every day. I post maybe 2-4 times a week. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time reading, engaging with other people's posts as well, answering comments on previous posts. Sometimes some of my posts get a lot of comments and I like to reply to all of them, but it might take me a while. there's so much interesting stuff to read on LinkedIn as well, like articles by people, by gurus, or by people that you find interesting to read. Mm-hmm. And that gives you ideas as well onto what content to post next and what is being talked about in the industry and in the industry of your ideal client. So I spend a lot of time just reading, liking, commenting, replying, and then posting as well.
What about, I have a question on groups now. Are you in many groups or just a few strategically selected ones?
I'm not in many groups, because when I realized how important they were, I was already getting results elsewhere, like through my content and my followers and stuff. I don't engage a lot in groups either. However, I do know from colleagues that it's proven really successful to them. They got more business. You know, some people are shy and don't like posting much and don't feel comfortable writing content. So they have a different strategy to mine. And what they do is they engage with other people's posts a lot. They go into private groups and they form relationships just by engaging with other people's content. Mm-hmm. And they become noticeable to those other people just because they're always showing up to engage with what those people are posting. And they do that in groups as well. I cannot speak from experience because, like I said, I'm not always engaging in groups. Mm-hmm. But I do know firsthand that it's a really, really successful strategy to implement as well.
Yes, yes. Okay, I could ask you so many questions, but I think I'm going to have to cap it off here sometime. So a question that I ask everyone is, of course, what marketing strategy works really well for you right now? I think we've talked about that all the whole hour, but...
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I ventured out last year. I tried something new last year, and it's already proving quite successful. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I organized a conference, which is something that happens offline. Mm-hmm. But it got really, really good.
Translators or for your target market?
For both. So it's the Creative Language Conference. So it's aimed at marketers, copywriters, translators, mm-hmm. and anyone just with an interest in creativity in the context of artificial intelligence. Because I specialize in IT as well. I've got a high interest in artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. So it's a creative language conference, creativity in the artificial intelligence era. And we got a lot of interest. So many people, it's almost sold off. The problem is that with the current coronavirus thing, we've had to put it off until September. We don't know if we're going to be able to have it in September or if we will go
in London.
In London, yeah. And that is not online marketing and it's actually offline. And I was out of my comfort zone there, having to organize that and to do a lot of outbound selling because you need to get in touch with potential sponsors and to remind people that the early bird rate is going to be finished in a week's time to buy their tickets and stuff. So it was very challenging for me being so used to doing inbound marketing. But the results were great as well. So I would highly recommend people to try and step out of their comfort zones every once and again to try it out because they might be surprised.
Yes. Okay. Actually, I was recommended to interview you and that's how I found out more about you. And I know when I was reading your profile and everything that you have your website, you have a course for translators. Tell us about
that. Yeah. So that's something that I put together for translators looking when they're trying to pick a niche and they realize that marketing might be their niche. Yes. And what they want to do. This course is the first step to that. So it's an introduction to marketing translation and where to start and how to insert themselves in the marketing industry as language service providers. It's 3 hours worth of content approximately, mm-hmm. 9 chapters, and yeah, it covers a lot, and it's at the moment there's a discount code because of the coronavirus thing, that people can use, and it's a one-off payment that gives you 20-year access to the platform. So if you're one of those people like me that you buy courses and you don't get started until 3 years later.
Yes.
This is one of those courses that allow you to do it.
Okay. After 3 years, I would have forgotten about the course altogether. But where should we go to find out more about that?
So if you go to crisoltranslations.com, that Crisol spelled C-R-I-S-O-L, crisoltranslations.com, you will find a tab on the menu on top that says marketing translation course, and all you need to know is there. So we teach the eight main types of marketing, the difference between localization, translation, and transcreation, how to translate digital marketing, key performance indicators, SEO, PPC and PPM, UX and UI, how to charge for your work as a marketing translator, checklists on how to perform the transcreation of blog posts and social media and slogans. So there's lots of practical stuff there that will come in very handy.
And we will, of course, put a link to this in the show notes.
Brilliant. So, thank you a lot.
Thank you so much, Maria, for this. It's been great. I've been playing the devil's advocate and asking a lot of questions, but it's been a great interview. So thank you so much.
Thanks. I hope I've been able to answer most of those questions to the listeners' satisfaction.
And as you know, or I don't know if you know, but I also talk, I teach a lot of inbound marketing to other translators. So
yeah, I do. I follow you everywhere and I read your stuff all the time.
Thanks. Well, it's been great to talk to you. And I just want to summarize that by attracting our traffic to us, we can convert and delight our convert into clients and delight our clients over time, which then they can become promoters. It's a great way for freelance translators and interpreters to market ourselves, especially right now, I think. So thank you so much, Maria, and thank you to all the listeners. We will put all the links to this in the show notes. But you can always go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com, click on podcast, and in the search bar, you can put inbound marketing or Maria or something like that, and you will get to it. So thanks again, Maria. It's been a pleasure. And thank you to all the listeners. I hope you found this valuable. If you liked it, please subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app. Leave me a review if you have time, or share the episode with anyone else that might find it beneficial. Have a great week, everyone, and I will see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app, or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.